Hello, this is Wendy Bauer returning with the Decatur Herald and Review for April 4th, 2016. We continue now with the death notices on page A4. Deaths listed for Decatur and Macon County: Elizabeth J. Atwood, Decatur; Helen A. Beals, Decatur; Janice Chandler, Decatur; Lee R. Collins, Decatur; Aaron Cook, Decatur; Betty June Foster, Decatur; Woodrow Gosnell, Mount Zion; Dolores Elaine Luker, Decatur; Janet Markham, Decatur; Carson W. Rogers, Decatur; Danielle Schaefer, Decatur; Howard Shakespeare, Decatur; Lorraine Waddell, Decatur. From Central Illinois, deaths listed include Judith L. Bennett of Springfield, Barbara J. Cunningham of Clinton, Lenora M. Devan of Atwood, Kermit W. Eddy of Pena, Mary A. Hall of Sullivan, Violet Lee of Sullivan, Mildred J. Price of Lincoln, Mary Anna Snoke of Cerro Gordo, Sharon K. Taylor of Sullivan, Donna Thacker of Walnut, Florence A. Walters of Cisco, and Royal E. Weber, Nokomis. And of the obituaries listed, we will begin with Elizabeth J. Atwood of Decatur. Elizabeth J. Atwood, 60, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away at 8:40 p.m. Friday, April 1st, 2016, in St. John's Hospital, Springfield, Illinois. A service to celebrate Liz's life will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, April 6th, 2016, at South Shores Christian Church. The family will receive friends for visitation Tuesday evening from 5 p.m. until 8 p.m. at the church. Burial will be in Point Pleasant Cemetery, Long Creek. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorials to the South Shores Christian Church. Betty June Foster of Decatur. Betty June Foster, 92, of Decatur, passed away Saturday, April 2, 2016, at McKinley Court Rehabilitation Center. Funeral services to celebrate the life of Betty June Foster will be at noon on Tuesday, April 5, 2016, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to 12 noon Tuesday, before the service at the funeral home. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the Alzheimer's Association. Dolores Elaine Luker of Decatur. Doris Elaine Doty Luker, 80, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away on Friday, April 1st, 2016, at St. Mary's Hospital. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, April 6th, at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur. Visitation will be from 5 to 8 o'clock p.m. on Tuesday, April 5th, at the funeral home. Burial will be in the Mausoleum Park in Clinton, Illinois. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations to any of the following: Cancer Care Specialists of Central Illinois, or Scoville Zoo. Janet Markham, Decatur. Janet Markham, 71, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away at 3:02 p.m. Friday, April 1st, 2016, in her residence. A graveside service to celebrate Janet's life will be held at 2:30 p.m. Thursday, April 7th, 2016, at Pleasant View Cemetery, Assumption. The family will receive friends for visitation Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m. at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion. Memorials may be made to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Carson W. Rogers, Decatur. Carson W. Rogers, 23, of Decatur, passed away Friday, April 1st, 2016, in his home. Services to celebrate Carson's life will be at 1:30 p.m. Wednesday, April 6th, 2016, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 o'clock p.m. on Tuesday, April 5th, 2016, at the funeral home. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to the family in care of Patty Traxler or Eric Rogers. Danielle Schaefer, Decatur. Danielle Schaefer, infant child of Matthew James Schaefer and Stacy Sapp, died Monday, March 28, 2016, at St. Mary's Hospital. A graveside service will be held at 1 o'clock p.m., Tuesday, April 5th, 2016, in Graceland Cemetery. Violet Lee Sullivan. Violet Lee, 94, of Sullivan, passed away at 10:10 p.m. Friday, April 1st, 2016, in St. Mary's Hospital, Decatur. Graveside services will be at 10 o'clock a.m. Wednesday in the Green Hill Cemetery, Sullivan. Kermit W. Eddy of Pena. Kermit W. Eddy, 72, of Pena, retired CAT employee, died Thursday, March 31st, 2016. Memorials may be made to the Pena Community Hospital Foundation for Cardiac Rehab or Quad County Hospice. Funeral services will be on Wednesday, April 6th, 2016, in First Church of the Nazarene in Pena at 11 o'clock a.m. Burial will be in Mound Cemetery in Pena. Visitation will be Tuesday from 5 to 8 p.m. in the church. Mary A. Hall of Sullivan. Mary A. Hall, 85, of Sullivan, passed away at 8:17 a.m. on Saturday, April 2, 2016, in St. Mary's Hospital, Decatur. Celebration of life services will be at 1 o'clock p.m. Wednesday in the Reed Funeral Home, Sullivan. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday. Burial will be in the Green Hill Cemetery, Sullivan. Memorials are suggested to the American Heart Association or to the Moultrie County Relay for Life. Sharon K. Taylor of Sullivan. Sharon K. Taylor, 78, of Sullivan, passed away at 2:15 p.m. Saturday, April 2nd, 2016, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Wednesday, April 6th, 2016, at McMullen Young Funeral Home in Sullivan. Visitation will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, April 5th, 2016, at McMullen Young Funeral Home in Sullivan. Burial will be in Marrowbone Township Cemetery in Bethany. Memorials may be made to the American Cancer Society. Donna Thacker, Walnut. Donna Thacker, age 72, of Walnut, Illinois, died Thursday, March 31, 2016, at Perry Memorial Hospital in Princeton. Funeral services will be conducted on Wednesday, 10 a.m., at the Garland Funeral Home in Walnut. Burial will be in Walnut Cemetery. Visitation will be held on Tuesday from 4 to 7 p.m. at Garland Funeral Home. A memorial has been established to the Heritage Manor Nursing Home. We will now read from the Sunday paper, April 3, 2016, from the front page. Article by Teresa Churchill, Herald and Review senior writer. Back in the Family, New Staley Museum tells story of founder's life and company. A.E. Staley's legacy. His American dream continues to shape Decatur. A Victorian masterpiece built on College Hill for a local manufacturer in 1884 quickly caught the eye of a young southerner and traveling salesman named Augustus Eugene Staley. Well kept and attractive, with a groom to care for stable and carriages, the house represented the ideal home to him. "It was the finest I had ever seen," Staley recalled in 1924. "I would stop and admire it and wonder if I would ever have the chance to own a home like that." By coincidence, he did buy the house in 1913, the year after he reopened a defunct starch plant in Decatur as A.E. Staley Manufacturing Company to begin making the cornstarch he'd been selling out of Baltimore since 1898. Owned by the family for 40 years, the former Staley Mansion is back in the family's hands and begins a new chapter next weekend as the Staley Museum. The focus is A.E. Staley Sr., his company, and his legacy, personal and professional. Julie Staley, president of the museum board and wife of Mark Staley, the treasurer, said they've seen the value of preserving family history from the community response to the Hieronymus Mueller Museum, opened 20 years ago and relocated in 2005 to 420 West El Dorado Street. "When the opportunity came to purchase the Staley Mansion just a block away, we thought it would be the perfect setting to bring the story of A.E. Staley back to life," she said. Mark Staley's brother, Grant Staley, is vice president and secretary of the board. The brothers are great-grandsons of Hieronymus Mueller and A.E. Staley Sr. through the 1926 marriage of their paternal grandparents, Lenore Mueller and A.E. Staley Jr. The family didn't have to look far to find the right staff to run the Staley Museum. Director Laura Jarr is also assistant director of the Mueller Museum, and assistant director Mike Dethridge is also the Mueller director. Nor did they need to do much to the house itself, as previous owners had done a fine job converting it back from apartments to a single-family residence. "We're not intending to be a period home," Jarr said. "We're a museum, and that happens to be in the family home. The intention is to tell stories about the family, the company, and the community." For example, one of the first portraits of A.E. Staley Sr. you see upon entering is on loan from the Masonic Temple. It was painted by Shelbyville artist Robert Root to honor Staley, a Mason, for his contributions to the construction of the temple's 1929 building. Other rooms on the south side of the main floor are devoted to Staley's family and to the Decatur Staley's football team and other athletics, but the sun porch explores the history of A.E. Staley Manufacturing Company and includes exhibits and information about Tate and Lyle as well. Macon County Master Gardeners have also spruced up the landscape as the time draws near for the Staley Museum to open. "It's a local history museum, a work in progress, and an American dream story," Jarr said. "Who doesn't like American dream stories?" The article is accompanied with a photograph, a beautiful photograph of the interior, showing a dark hardwood stairway leading up from the entryway. The caption says, "The entryway has been restored and several pieces from the Staley office are scattered throughout the new Staley Museum. Museum Assistant Director Mike Dethridge is restoring a cabinet in what will be the women's room in the background." And two more photographs showing the outside. Staley Museum Director Laura Jarr said the columns in the front of the 131-year-old Staley home will undergo restoration work. And another photograph, the entrance to the new Staley Museum has stairs, but many of the original features have been maintained. Then the sidebar indicates, if you go, what it is. It's the Staley Museum. When? Opening weekend will be from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday, April 9th, and 1 to 4 p.m. on Sunday, April 10th. Where? 361 North College Street. Admission fee, $3 for adults, $1 for children 17 and younger. Free admission on April 9th. The sister museum is the Hieronymus Mueller Museum at 420 West El Dorado Street, which will be open the same hours next weekend. Regular hours in the future will be 1 to 4 p.m. on Tuesday through Saturday, and also 1 to 4 p.m. on the last Sunday of the month, March through November. For more information, find Staley Museum on Facebook or visit staleymuseum.com or call 217-422-1212. And from the local page, Group Addresses Educational Issues in Decatur. Article by Chris Lisvardi, Herald and Review staff writer from Decatur. Julius Bailey doesn't want the education of children to become solely about numbers. Bailey, an author and former Millikan professor now teaching philosophy at Wittenberg University in Springfield, Ohio, spoke Saturday during a Caring Black Men of Decatur breakfast at the Main Street Church of the Living God. Education is more than test scores, Bailey said. We need to allow our children to dream. Students in Decatur, particularly those who are Black and Hispanic, are struggling as new standards are being implemented, Bailey said. He said it's important to know the reason behind the numbers. Helping children succeed starts by being involved and engaged with what they're doing, Bailey said. Children will learn from what adults do, like Bailey said he did as a young student. We have to be examples for what we want young people to be, Bailey said. Decreasing reliance on technology and social media is an important part of making a difference, Bailey said. The discussion during the event was intended to provide information about the issues in the education system, said Jeffrey Perkins, Caring Black Men president. Further discussions are needed to more completely address the issues and come up with solutions, he said. Members of the group are in Decatur schools on a daily basis, talking with nearly 300 boys every week, Perkins said. Changing their outlook takes involvement from parents, the school district, and community, Perkins said. It's going to take all of us working together. We're not doing all we can do. Making a difference starts at a young age, not just with older students, said Michael Dugan, Decatur School District Assistant Superintendent. Students should be reading in every class, not just language arts, as improving literacy rates is addressed, Dugan said. Dugan looks for the story behind the numbers, including test scores, in order to show what's taking place in the educational system. He said trends are important in terms of test scores. I want to see improvement, Dugan said. Teachers need to have experience so they can be most effective, which is usually after they've been teaching more than 5 years. Some of them are leaving the district after 3 or 4 years, he said. We have to hold on to those teachers so they can become effective, Dugan said. He also said that teacher salaries in the district that appear to be decreasing are because veteran teachers are retiring and are being replaced by ones in their first or second years of experience. He said the challenge is becoming how to support newer teachers who continue to care about their students. And the Scoville Zoo shakes off winter for opening day. From Decatur, Blake Maffett celebrated his second birthday on an exceptionally windy Saturday with a visit to the zoo, accompanied by parents Sean and Jessica Maffett and a total of 40 adults and children in the family. He loves animals, especially farm animals, Jessica Maffett said. We thought this would be fun for the kids. Scoville Zoo opened for the season Saturday and will be open 7 days a week until fall, Zoo Director Ken Fry said. The cool temperatures and the cold nights mean that some of the animals have not yet been brought out of the indoor winter quarters, but many are out. The wallabies, lemurs, skinks, and goats have babies, and the zoo just acquired an Aldabra tortoise. He's about the size of a softball now, Fry said, but he'll be 400 to 500 pounds when he's full grown. People will have to be patient, though, because that will take about 20 years. The tortoise has an expected lifespan of more than 100 years and is only one, Fry said, which means he'll be around long after most of today's zoo visitors are gone. The alligators, South American birds, and other warm climate creatures can't handle the cold, but the ones who were out in the sun Saturday and seemed unaffected by the high winds. A sign blew down in the penguin habitat, but nothing else was damaged. Renee Sevier brought her son, James Sullivan, to the zoo. She lives in Champaign, but her parents live in Decatur, and she was visiting them. We don't have a zoo, so this is our home zoo, she said, as James ran from one end of the penguin exhibit to another. He's especially fond of the penguins, she said. Saturday was also the first day of work for the zoo's summer crew, many of them high school students. Fry was kept busy making sure they were trained for their jobs, and his son, who has grown up around the zoo during Fry's tenure, is now 18 and old enough to drive the train this year, he said. Both my wife and son are going to be here today to help out. Bless their hearts, Fry said. Stephanie Klaus is starting her second summer working at the zoo, and her job is mainly at the concession stand. She's a senior at LSA High School. It's work, of course, but it's fun, too, she said. New hire Allura Pound, a Mount Zion High School senior, grew up around the zoo because her family lived nearby. She's always liked the zoo, so working there was almost inevitable. You get to meet new people and make new friends, said Pound, who also takes shifts at the gift shop. And the article is accompanied by photographs, picture of a little girl feeding some black goats. Sophia Kowalenko feeds the goats during her visit to the petting zoo of Scoville Zoo. And a photograph of a child looking and watching the penguins play in the pond. Jacqueline Pound waves to her friends, Brianna Hoffman and Ariana Wilson, from inside the bubble in the penguin exhibit. And a photograph of a little red train. A new crew is learning how to drive the popular train ride during Scoville Zoo's first day of the season. And now an article from Bloomington, written by Marie Nagel, a Lee News Service writer. Route 66 Visitors Center, popular draw in Bloomington. Downtown Bloomington has become a destination for thousands of Route 66 travelers in the first year of the Cruisin' with Lincoln on 66 Visitors Center, and the area is reaping economic benefits. These are visitors who have been bypassing our community for years, said Beth Wiseman, executive director of the McLean County Museum of History, where the Visitors Center occupies the first floor. These are new dollars, new people, and a very new audience to our community. The Visitors Center will mark its one-year anniversary with a celebration from noon to 4 p.m. on April 25th, including a Route 66-themed performance by the Sound of Illinois Chorus at 12:15 p.m. There will be free admission to the museum. Since it opened on April 25th, 2015, more than 16,000 people have visited the center. Of the 3,200 people who signed the guest registry, 311 were international, 933 were from out of state, 892 were not from McLean County, and a little over 1,000 were local residents. The numbers do not reflect a full tourism season because the center opened its doors mid-season last year. So, with a full season ahead and increased marketing, the museum expects the numbers for the 2016 season to outpace those of 2015, said Jeff Woodard, the museum's marketing director. An Illinois Wesleyan University study conducted last fall showed in just its first 4 months, the visitor's center generated $332,090 to $445,050 in visitors, $445,050 in visitor spending locally. That dollar figure is much higher today, Woodard said. We are thrilled to now have a Route 66 attraction which has already economically impacted our area with increased visitors, said Crystal Howard, director of the Bloomington Normal Convention and Visitors Bureau. Mayor Terry Renner said he is pleased with the new center's role in getting Bloomington Normal more of the Route 66 tourism traffic. It's a critical step in the revitalization of downtown Bloomington, he added. This is one of the reasons why we have someone willing to invest $53 million in our downtown to build a hotel, conference center, and parking deck. The international visitors were from 42 nations, ranging from China and Germany to Bulgaria and Yemen. Whether it is hitchhiking Chinese students experiencing the vintage Pepsi machine, or a group from Switzerland looking for unique local items like Funk's Grove maple syrup, travelers are finding their way here and learning about what the community has to offer, Woodard said. In addition to linking Route 66 to local Abraham Lincoln sites, the center is also introducing visitors to local products and businesses, such as Beisch Candy, Beer Nuts, and the Steak and Shake restaurant chain, which was founded in 1934 in Normal. That's not the only thing we want to do, but we've become a distribution point for local products, and that's a direct economic impact, said Woodard. Surveys filled out by 210 visitors said 72% also wanted to go to restaurants in downtown Bloomington. The visitors said they also wanted to visit theaters, parks, music venues, art galleries, Miller Park Zoo, and other Route 66 sites. Museum staff routinely walk visitors to nearby restaurants and called ahead to make reservations for travelers, Woodard said. I love that my restaurant is so close, said Kelly Mathey, who owns Kelly's Bakery and Cafe at 116 North Center Street, with her husband Jamie. The Visitors Center has gotten a lot of traffic, which is keeping the downtown more vibrant with families who are coming there as a destination, Mathey said. It's definitely a destination location. They are coming there. That is something that we're hoping will go beyond our immediate neighborhood because there are Route 66 sites in Normal and throughout McLean County, Wiseman said. And then a photograph of the inside of the center, captioned Jeff Woodard, Director of Marketing and Community Relations for the McLean County Museum of History in Bloomington, examines displays in the museum's Cruisin' with Lincoln on 66 Visitors Center. And finally, pot dispensary delayed from Normal. Residents will have to wait to purchase medical marijuana products from a dispensary being built in North Normal. We will not be opening in 3 weeks, said Tanya Griffin, Vice President of Local Expansion for Denver, Colorado-based marijuana company The Green Solution. Inspections set with the Illinois Department of Financial and Professional Regulation for the end of May, so that's what I'm shooting for. Griffin said getting permits to rebuild the former Curves building took longer than expected. And this has been Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, April 3rd and 4th, 2016. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Thank you.